It's time for another edition of On Your Money. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, November 13th. We'll talk a little bit about money and politics during this edition of On Your Money, including what happens if we walk off the so-called fiscal cliff. Plus, financial planner Kevin McKinley will discuss some frequently asked questions regarding saving for retirement, options for health insurance, and layaway, the pros and cons of layaway. Plus, of course, he'll have answers to your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy.
So, are you getting your holiday shopping started yet?
Yes. I alerted my wife, Rachel, that December 25th is only 7 weeks away, so I'm done.
And did you put anything on layaway?
I may have. We'll talk about
all right.
Down the road.
That's coming up. More on layaway. I'm almost hesitant to bring up money in politics, Kevin. It was only a week ago that we had the election, but over the next several weeks, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of personal financial uncertainty. And you say there are some moves that we should consider.
Yeah, remember when there really wasn't much of a discussion about political partisanship or bickering at the local or state or federal or international level? Man, that was the day.
Right,
and now we're right back into it again, thanks to our good friends in Congress. The election did not mark the end of political bickering, in part because of some tax cuts that are scheduled to expire at the end of the year, which, if allowed to expire, would raise income taxes, income tax rates, capital gains rates, and there's a payroll tax increase that was put in a couple years ago, which is also scheduled to come back into place, which will take about 2% more from most workers' paychecks. And there is even bigger trouble down the road that we might be facing if they can't reach an agreement on what should occur.
All right. So what happens if an agreement can't be reached?
That is where we will go off this fiscal cliff, as you mentioned here. It's a self-imposed cliff, really, that Congress and several other people involved put in place to give themselves some kind of artificial incentive to actually reach an agreement, but obviously that hasn't worked. And when those higher rates and also cuts in spending come into place, the rates will take in another $532 billion in taxes next year, and the cuts in spending will mean $136 billion less that the government will be spending. The Tax Policy Center says about 4 out of 5 households, if this does come to fruition, will pay about $3,700 more on average in higher taxes in 2013. That's not even the worst news. The worst news is that the drop in spending and the increased taxes, the Congressional Budget Office says that that'll cut at least 0.5% off of gross domestic product and raise unemployment from the current rate of about 7.9% up to 9.1%. And there are a lot of indications that that couldn't come at a worse time, because we may already be going into a slower time in the economy as it sits.
There's no way that, even with all the bickering, that our leaders are going to allow us to fall off this fiscal cliff, do you think, Kevin?
I think you're probably right. I hope you're right, especially since Congress's approval rate right now is running at an all-time low of about 10% or so. So I'm hoping that there will be some kind of compromise, and it will be along the lines of kicking the can down the road, where they'll extend all the provisions and tax cuts, et cetera, off another year or so. And hopefully there'll be another year, so they don't have to start having two different tax rates working in a one tax calendar year, if you will. They'll delay action. They'll make a small compromise. It probably won't affect most people, but there will be a lot of uncertainty. And the uncertainty is becoming even more problematic than the actual rules coming into place, because people don't know how to act. You can give people rules and they'll be upset about it. Certain people will, anyway. But if you don't give them any guidelines as to what's going to happen, it's very difficult to plan for it, whether it's hiring or spending or what have you. So hopefully they will reach some type of agreement and make it as permanent as they possibly can.
So what do you think? Do we just sit tight, or do you think there are some things that we can do before the end of the year?
Between the uncertainty and changes coming and the outlook for the economic situation, I would recommend you at least consider, if you have investments outside of a retirement account, that you take a look at selling them, both to realize gains and hopefully pay taxes on a profit at a lower rate now than you might in the future, and also taking the losses, because losses help offset taxable income, both now and in the future. You may want to plan on boosting up your pre-tax retirement plan savings rate as much as possible. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And also, this is not a good time to be sticking your neck out. We get many calls from people saying, I'm only getting 0.5% or none percent on my checking or savings account, and somebody's offered me an annuity or a bond mutual fund or whatever. This probably isn't the best time to be taking real aggressive action with your investments, trying to get a slightly higher yield. You may end up falling off your own personal cliff if you do.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. And it is time now for the On Your Money email bag. And we also welcome your questions for Kevin at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org, onyourmoney@wpr.org. And we are going to, though, Kevin, finish up our series on saving for retirement at work. And we are going to be answering three of the most frequently asked questions about saving for retirement. And the first one is, should I borrow from my retirement plan to pay off my credit card?
Maybe. I'll say maybe. First of all, can you? Not everyone has that provision allowed in the retirement plan, and it's not big. If you don't have it in there, it might mean that the type of plan your boss offers does not offer it, period. That structure doesn't. Or you have a plan where your boss has said, you know what, we don't want to give people the opportunity to do this because we're afraid that they'll get themselves into even deeper trouble by being able to borrow from it. So if you do have the type of plan that offers you the chance to take a loan out from it, first of all, you have to answer a couple questions. Will you cancel those credit cards that have allowed you to charge up these unpayable balances? Because if you don't cancel the cards, there's a very good chance that, people being people, you'll get right back in the same situation that got you here in the first place. If you're going to borrow from a retirement plan, you do want to at least make the minimum payments required to keep the loan current as you pay it back. And you may even want to borrow a little bit more so that you have cash, just to make sure you can not only pay the credit cards off, but also make the payments off on the loan as well. The bad part about borrowing from a retirement plan at work is that if you do lose your job, either you quit or you're terminated, you have to pay off the loan immediately. And if you can't pay it off, it becomes a taxable distribution, which means you'll get hit with taxes and penalties just like you took the money out on your own. And usually that dollar amount can be about 30% of whatever you can't pay off. So if you borrow $10,000, you lose your job, you'll get a taxable distribution that requires you to pay about 30%, so $3,000 in the form of penalties and taxes. And by definition, you probably don't have that $3,000 just sitting aside to pay that. So then, instead of owing the credit card company, now you owe the IRS.
And then the next question is, what should I do with a retirement account I have with an ex-employer?
Very, very commonly offered. Most people actually, I think the average job term held right now for adults is probably about 3.5 to 4 years or so. So if you do change jobs every few years, you probably have a lot of those little accounts scattered around there. You have a few options. The first one is, you may be able to just leave it with the old employer unless you're required to pull it out by the plan's document. If so, you can move it to your new employer plan. In many cases, check with your new employer's plan to see if they'll take in those new accounts. Or, and this is what I would probably recommend, is you move the money to a self-directed IRA, individual retirement account. And you can do that at a bank or a credit union or an insurance company, a mutual fund company. You can find a financial advisor. Or you can do it yourself by going to one of the very large and very competent do-it-yourself investment companies like Vanguard or Schwab or Fidelity. As long as the money is moved from a custodian to a custodian, meaning it goes from your plan to one of these other providers, and you don't take the money out and put it in your checking account, there'll be no taxes or penalties whatsoever. And the good news is you got to not only get more transparency, you know exactly what's going on with the money, but also you get many more investment options. You can buy stocks or bonds or CDs or all different kinds of mutual funds. So usually the self-directed IRA is the way to go. And when you call these providers, you know, they do this all day, every day for thousands of people just like you. So when you call them up and say, I want to transfer my retirement account to you, they'll usually take care of as much of the paperwork as they can.
And finally, the last question is, should I save for retirement via a plan at work, an IRA, or a Roth IRA?
It's probably an order that I would like most people to use, and that is, first of all, save enough to get the match from any employer match offered through your plan. Now, not every employer offers a matching contribution, but if they do, you definitely want to save enough to at least get the match as much as you possibly can. Then you want to save enough to get you down to the 15% federal tax bracket. And some people are already there. Some people have no way of getting there because they make too much money. But if you can, you want to get down to the 15% bracket. And that number is determined by what's on line 43 of your 1040 form. That's line 43, and it's about $70,000 for married couples filing jointly, and about half that amount, $35,000, for singles. So save enough to get down to that bracket. Then you might want to switch to a Roth IRA if you do have more ability to save. And once you've maxed out any Roth IRA options, then you can switch back to your at-work plan. Now, for people who say, I really have a hard time saving money, every single month, we never know if we're going to have enough. I can't stand putting money aside for 15 or 20 years that I might need in the next 2 weeks. Then you may want to use a Roth IRA. You don't get a tax deduction on the deposit, but you can pull the contribution back out whenever you want with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. Contributions can be taken out of Roth IRAs with no taxes or penalties. So if you know you need to save, but you really have a hard time setting it aside for that long of a time until you retire, Roth IRA is the way to go.
Good. Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC, with us just about every Tuesday at this time to share information and advice on your money. Our number, and we have an open line for you if you have a personal finance question for Kevin, is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, onyourmoney@wpr.org. You can also post your question on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Your Money, we're going to talk about the cost of a trip to the ER, or the cost of getting sick, the cost of health insurance. That's coming up on this edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley is with us, Certified Financial Planner, and our number, if you have a question for him, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And to phone calls we go. Molly in Columbus is with us first. Hello, Molly.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question. We have our home for sale, which has 40 acres with it. And several years ago, we broke off the 40 acres from the house, so it's two parcels, but it's been our main residence, and they're connected together. We are now selling it, and one person is buying the house, another is buying the 40 acres. Will it still be treated as tax purposes as one property?
Do you have a CPA you use right now, Molly?
I did call before we put the house up for sale, and he said he thought long as we sold them within 2 years, you know, the house and the property sold within 2 years of each other, and we can show that it was our main residence, like the property isn't 10 miles down the road, it's connected mm-hmm. to the house, that it would be treated as one property and we wouldn't have to pay taxes on one, and the other was just, you know, as your your home tax exempt.
Right. Do you have an idea as to how much you might make in profit on the home?
We'll be under the $500,000 capital gains.
Okay. Then for married couples filing jointly, just so people know, you can sell your primary residence right now under today's laws and exclude up to $250,000 in gains for individuals or $500,000 for married couples filing jointly. Molly, unless this is just a wildly profitable and sold for a huge figure, I would be very surprised if you would have any capital gains liability on it in this case. And even if you do, by nature of the way the laws are right now, and especially if you do close in 2012, the rates are lower than they've ever been on long-term capital gains. So if you can get it, put it this, it'll be, I mean, I bet you'll pay the broker more probably than you pay in capital gains, depending on the size of the property. So I would definitely get a seat. This would be a very good year for you, especially to have a CPA do your taxes. And then I would also get in right now with that same CPA and give the person the actual numbers so you can decide what price you need to get before you can sell to pay off the tax bill, if there is one. And then also do a little planning. So if there are some of the things you can do to offset any capital gains tax that you would have to pay, you're doing that now while you still have calendar 2012, 6 weeks left anyway, to do some of those moves.
Thanks, Molly, for the call, and good luck to you. Tom in Fond du Lac emails, "My wife and I are both about 60. We can easily pay off our mortgage balance within 1 year. You've advised taking out a new mortgage for as much as possible and saving the cash for possible future emergencies. Doesn't a home equity line of credit achieve the same goal at a lower cost?"
Tom is correct. It does technically achieve the same goal at a lower cost. The problem is that a home equity line of credit, for people who can't either get a mortgage or can't force themselves to take out a new mortgage, a home equity line of credit is the next best thing. And what it does is the bank determines how much equity you have in your home. Meaning if you have a $100,000 home, they might say, well, you can borrow up to 70% of the value or $70,000 at any given moment. The interest that you pay on that usually is a floating rate. And technically, the bank can either cap that home equity line of credit or call it in at a given moment. Very rarely happens, but it can happen. So you guarantee yourself a higher cost by taking out a new mortgage, meaning you're going to have a higher cost probably to get the mortgage in terms of closing fees, et cetera. And you're also going to be paying interest for as long as you keep the money out. But you've locked in the interest rate that will be charged on that loan for 30 years if you get a 30-year mortgage. And it's very difficult for the bank to take that mortgage option away from you as long as you make your regular payments. So, yes, Tom's right. I'd like to see a home equity line of credit if you can't force yourself to get a mortgage, but the mortgage does buy you more time and more certainty in terms of what the terms of that loan will be.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and our next caller is Michelle in Deerfield. Hi, Michelle.
Hi.
Yes, what's your question?
My question is if you can take money from a traditional IRA and put it into a Roth IRA without paying the tax penalty on it?
Well, I know I had to pay a tax on that.
I know I'd have to pay the tax, but how about the penalty?
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, you don't have to pay a penalty. That's a good question, Michelle. What happens is you roll the money over from the IRA to the Roth IRA, and let's say it's $10,000. Well, that will technically add $10,000 to your taxable income, but as long as it goes into a qualified Roth IRA, then there is no extra penalty on top of it. And for people listening, why Michelle and other people might want to do that is they think that the rate that they will be taxed on that conversion right now is lower than what they might pay on that distribution in the future if you were to take it out. Sometimes that will be true, especially if you have a year in which you have a lower income, you don't have a job, or you have some losses or business expenses to offset the income from the conversion. For most people, though, most people under today's tax laws are going to be in a lower tax rate in retirement when they're drawing the IRA out. So it can be a good idea, but it's certainly not for everybody all the time.
Okay. Can I ask you one more thing?
Sure.
I'm sorry. That's all.
Only one for a customer. No, go ahead, Michelle.
Another question I have is that I've heard recommendations to take money out of a 401k through a loan to pay off your mortgage. Do you think that's a good idea?
I do not think that's a good idea at all. I think you're actually making two problems there. I assume you're under 59 and a half, right, Michelle?
Yes.
Okay. You're creating two problems for yourself. One is you're probably going to pay taxes and penalties on that 401k money when you pull it out. And then you're tying up a lot of your liquidity that was normally in your retirement account and met for your retirement in your home, which is sticks and plaster and dirt. And it's many times very difficult to get that money back out of it when you need it. So, no, I would much rather have you leave the 401k intact and then leave the mortgage alone as well and just pay it off as slowly as you possibly can while still making the minimum payment.
So if you take out a 401k loan, you would pay tax and penalties on it with the idea that you're paying it back in?
Yeah, but no, not the loan. You shouldn't do that again, because let's say you lose your job, first of all, you're going to have to repay that loan right away. Second of all, you're going to have a very difficult time getting a mortgage if, by definition, you've lost your job. So if you say, well, what I'll do is I'll go get a loan against my house and pay off the loan against 401k, it's very unlikely you'll be able to get that loan if you don't have a job. So no, I'd highly recommend you don't take money out of the 401k either as a distribution or as a loan to pay off your mortgage.
Boy, I was really impressed, Kevin, that you answered that very calmly. I thought you might even blow your stack at that very question.
I've only had one cup of coffee this morning, so I'm still a little subdued.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you have a question about personal finances or some sort of money matter, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Coming up in just a bit, by the way, we will be talking about options for health insurance and the pros and cons of layaway. That's coming up on this edition of On Your Money. Our next caller for Kevin is Mike in Fond du Lac. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. My question is, when I retire, I have approximately $750,000. What should I expect to pay a financial advisor to help me manage that?
It depends on what the actual advisor's fee is, but typically, especially at full service brokerage firms, I would guess you're probably going to pay about 1 to 1.5% of that amount per year. There are places you can have it managed for less, and as you're scouting out potential advisors, weigh out not only the fees, but also what the actual dollar cost will be, because some advisors might say to you, you know what, Mike, we're only going to manage part of this. You should keep a bunch of this in a CD, or you should keep a bunch of this in a checking account. And there are several virtues to keeping it in a CD and checking account, one of which is you don't have to pay us on the on that particular batch of assets. And so, therefore, we can lower your dollar cost. And then the good or the bad news, Mike, is the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, in this case, which is you. And if someone says, I'm going to charge you 1%, you think it's worth it? It's worth it. If they say, I'm going to charge you 0.5% and you don't think it's worth it, it's not worth it. Just make sure that when you're scouting around for this, if someone says to you, hey, I'll help you out, there's no cost to it, that's probably not the case. They're getting commission or fees or something, and most people don't mind paying for that as long as they're very aware of what they are and they can decide if the services are worth it. Don't get yourself locked into some type of investment, like especially annuities, where you have a very difficult time getting out with paying a large surrender charge and moving it to someplace else, because sometimes that can make it difficult to weigh out the cost and the benefits of the relationship if that person got a big commission check up front and then really has no financial incentive to serve you on an ongoing basis.
Thanks much.
All right. Thank you, Mike. I'm Joy Cardine. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, and this is On Your Money. And it's time for the Smart Assets segment of the show. Health insurance, as we all know, is a topic that has many of us worried sick. Today, we're going to spend a few minutes talking about what to do at each stage of a person's life and work when it comes to health insurance. Kevin?
Yeah, let's start with the employer-provided health insurance plan, which is still the primary way that most people under Medicare age get their health care. Healthier people should definitely consider a high-deductible health plan combined with a health care savings account. you're going to get lower premiums from it, and you're going to get less taxes on the money that goes into an HSA. Now, again, you probably don't want a plan like this if you have ongoing costs or chronic costs where you're going to be paying out of pocket anyway. This is usually better, as looked upon almost at not quite catastrophic health insurance, but for things that you say, I'm not going to really be needing this likely in the next year, so this is a good way to go. The other thing that's changing now is the flexible savings accounts, the FSAs. The FSAs have become more restrictive in how they're used and what can be put into them, so it's probably not a good idea unless you're a very meticulous record keeper and in a very high tax bracket to use the flexible savings account. And finally, if you do have adult children who are either unemployed or are employed but not able to get health insurance through the particular employer, there are plenty of provisions left where people can add younger adults to their own health insurance policy at a relatively modest cost. So think about putting those adult kids on if they're having a hard time finding health insurance on their own.
What about people who need their own health insurance but aren't old enough to qualify for Medicare?
Yeah, we run into that a lot. Most of the people I work with in my private practice, my grown-up job, if you will, are people who can afford to retire before the age of 65. And that's usually the biggest question confronting them is after they figure out if they have enough money to survive, where do I get health care or at least health insurance before Medicare? You definitely want to keep your powder dry. We talk a lot about having a mortgage. This is actually a good time to at least have a mortgage or to have a home equity line of credit established. So if you do need to pay out-of-pocket health care expenses, you have that money without tapping retirement assets or savings. You also can get COBRA benefits generally from your previous employer, and that can last anywhere from 18 to 36 months. But that can be fairly expensive. And there's a place you can go to look for health insurance options on your own. Wonderful website set up by a nonprofit called coverageforall.org. Coverageforall.org. And for people who are stuck looking for their own health insurance, coverageforall.org. You go in, you talk, answer a few questions, anonymous, of course, about where you are and what your situation is, and it'll spit back usually about a half dozen different options of where you can go to look for both public and private health insurance options. Again, coverageforall.org, and we'll have a link to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
And with the re-election of President Obama and the Affordable Care Act in no, at least immediate, danger of being repealed, we can expect to see a lot of changes in the next few years in terms of health insurance, correct?
I think that's right. And I think even when this is solidified and as a part of the health care consciousness, if you will, we're still going to see changes all the time. So it is something that sadly people are going to be required to stay up on top of and to know the details of not only what their current plan is, but what their other options are going to be. There's going to be a health insurance requirement of people. If you don't have it, you're going to have to pay a penalty. That may affect how your employer offers health insurance coverage to you. And there are going to be health insurance exchanges set up throughout the country by law as of January 1st of 2014 that should allow residents to shop for health insurance on their own. And hopefully it will be not only be a little bit more affordable than their employer coverage plan or if they were to buy it on their own, but they hopefully can't be as excluded as much as they would be if they tried to find a policy today.
We'll take some more calls for Kevin McKinley, financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you call us at 1-800-642-1234, you can also email your question to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Grace in Fond du Lac is with us next. Hello, Grace.
Hi. We're a retired couple, and we have a couple of funds that are not IRA. We have an IRA fund, and our mortgage is paid off. We have a small line of credit that we took instead of the mortgage, but after listening to you, I think we did the wrong thing. But we've discussed what to do with some of the funds that we have out there now. Should we change them? Should we sell them? Some are bonds, some are stocks, and right now we really just don't know what to do with them.
Sure. Grace, are you working with someone, like an advisor, someone to kind of help you look at these things?
My husband had an advisor through when he retired. The company that he had his IRA with hooked him up with Fidelity so that he gets advice from there when he'd like it. And then we have a CPA that does our taxes.
Okay. It's difficult. This is giving individualized financial advice over the phone and the radio is one step removed from trying to give individual medical advice over the phone and the radio. But I will say that people in your position, especially at this time in life, should probably be more conservative with their investments than you ever have been before for two reasons. First of all, you're retiring, which is a big transition from working and earning to and saving to spending and drawing off of that money. The second thing being you're doing this at a time when if you're paying attention, you know this is the most financially volatile environment in which you've ever lived, and you have more to lose now than you ever have before. So I would definitely encourage you to be more conservative than less conservative. A lot of times when I look at people in your situation, we add up what you have in assets and between that and Social Security, et cetera, we realize that, you know, you can bury that money in the hole in the ground and pull it out for whatever you need every month, and the money will last for the next 30 years or something. So in that case, taking extra risk to get extra rate of return that you don't need is really not smart, and especially until you do get accustomed to being retirement and being retired and really knowing what your spendings are, your monthly spending
well,
is. I definitely want you to have at least a year's worth of living expenses set aside in straight cash that's not going to pay anything, but is also going to be there for you if you need it to live off of or to invest if the markets go down in value.
Thank you, Grace, for the call. Happy retirement. Michael in Glidden is with us next. Hello, Michael.
Hello. I own my own home, and I'm retired, but I am working part-time, and I still have a small mortgage on my home, but I'm wondering if you can give me some advice on reverse mortgages. Is there a point in time when they might be wise to tap into, and when, and how, and why, and so on? Thank you.
Sure. I actually think that reverse mortgages are not a bad tool to consider. They're frightening to many people because they involve basically giving up really the right to ownership of your home, which is a very visceral decision for many people to make. You have to be 62 years of age at least, and you have to have some equity in your home to get a reverse mortgage. And what it means is when you apply for one, you typically get it at a lender like a bank or a credit union. But you don't have to apply for the loan like you would. You don't have to have a good credit score. You don't have to have a job. And you basically get about 60% of the equity you have in the home. So again, if you have a $100,000 paid-for home, you could probably get a reverse mortgage, depending on your age, of maybe $60,000. And they give you that. There's no taxes to it. There's substantial fees up front, usually about 5 to 7% of the value of it. But you never have to pay that loan back. And then what happens is once you either leave the house vertically, you walk out and move to another location, or horizontally, you pass away, and you've been out of the house for at least a year, the house is sold, and the proceeds go to pay off whatever you borrowed plus the accumulated interest. And if there's any money above and beyond that, you or your estate gets it. But if the sale proceeds do not exceed what is owed, you do not owe that money. There are fees, and the lender, and then, of course, the government helps subsidize any loss that happens with that. So for someone in the right situation who says, I'm going to live here a long time, I want to keep this house, I can stay in here physically, but I really don't have the financial wherewithal to keep living plus make the payments on the mortgage. The reverse mortgage can be a good way to go. We have a website up at onyourmoney.com that I'll highlight later today, Michael, that you can go to find it's what's called a HUD-approved counselor, and that's a federal agency that you can find in your area to call, and they'll give you some guidance on it, unbiased guidance, and help you decide if it's the right thing for you.
And, Michael, good luck to you. Thanks for the call. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.
We're going shopping for Christmas. It's that time of year. We're going shopping for Christmas. Time to spread good cheer.
All right, we're going to talk about shopping for Christmas on On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. And Kevin, don't blame me for that song selection.
Well, I just was going to say, I really appreciate Rob and Bill and the others actually recording On Your Money original bumper music here. That was wonderful. Great production value. Good job, guys. You hit all the notes just right.
Yeah, you know, I was some mistake, I was at an outlet mall on the weekend. It was packed. People are out there shopping away.
They were looking for an outlet, weren't they?
Oh my, yeah, they were. Anyway, I understand that that an old fashioned way of paying for bigger purchases is making a comeback this holiday season.
That's right. A website called Coupon Cabin says that about a third of adults surveyed plan on considering layaway for their holiday purchasing needs. Now, this is something that many of us, when we were growing up, this is the way our parents paid for Christmas gift. My parents didn't get me any Christmas gifts, but if they would have, layaway would have been the way that I'm sure that they would have chosen to go. And a lot of people right now either can't use credit cards, they just don't have the ability to do it, or they don't want to. They don't want to put it on the plastic. So many of the major retailers, both online and in person, are using layaway to entice shoppers to get the product. And you usually put it on layaway, pick it up later on when you pay it off. It does actually have some pretty neat advantages, but there are, of course, some drawbacks as well.
Yeah, I remember doing this from time to time. The upside of using layaway, Kevin?
Well, you get the gift you want. Retailers are getting much better at timing the distribution of their products so it matches up with the demand. And it's unlikely that the highest demand products are going to be there on Christmas Eve. And so you can get it now without having to actually pay for it, reserve a particular product, if you will. You usually have to pay a small fee. And many of our larger retailers are waiving that fee. But there are no credit costs to it. You don't have to damage your credit report by charging up the balance as well. You can stay within your budget because you are going to end up probably just paying cash for this particular item. And here's a hidden advantage. You can maintain the surprise if you're in a household where a person you're purchasing a gift for also monitors the credit card bills. You might ruin the surprise by, and they say, "What's this $299 from so and so?" Well, if you get it on layaway, you can hide it from that particular person, and you have an out if you change your mind. Yes, you will be out the small fee, but if you see a better gift somewhere, or you get a cheaper price on the same product, you might lose the fee on that product, but you can buy it somewhere else.
Yeah. So What's the disadvantage of layaway?
It's the fees. Many of these companies not only charge a small fee to put it on layaway that, again, can be applied toward the price, but also if you do cancel, they might charge another fee that may be a small percentage or so. So there are certain types of products that you probably want to focus on for layaway rather than others.
So what types of purchases are best suited for using layaway?
Last year, it seems that the most popular ones were larger ticket items and coffee makers like the different, you know, single serve ones, netbooks, laptops, tablets, and this one was kind of surprising. Trampolines were one of the most laid away products purchased, which I don't want to ruin the surprise, but let's just say you and your husband, Joy, should make a little extra room in your backyard this year.
Okay? What in the world? That's interesting that the trampoline is on layaway. And I know, Kevin, I asked you at the beginning of the program if you got all your shopping done. Seems to me you do wait until the 24th, don't you, to get your shopping done?
I'm guilty of that. I like the adrenaline rush of just charging through the stores and grabbing wildly discounted items off and then seeing the disappointed looks on the kids' faces for the gifts that I purchase, not the ones. They're usually happy with what Santa brings, and then Dad's presents usually it's like, oh, this is from Dad, yeah. I suppose I'll open it. Okay. Oh, sure enough, a hammer.
You can still return items that were put on layaway, right?
Yes, you can definitely return items that were brought back. So make sure you save your receipt.
Here's an email from Santiago in Wisconsin Dells, who wants to ask you what you think of store credit cards. Is it good to have them? Are they more trouble than they're worth? What's important to know before signing up for a store credit card?
I think they're actually, and typically, unless there are some real major rewards associated with the card in the form of cash back, some of the retailers really have some great programs out there. And you also spend a lot of money at the store anyway. If you're going to be there spending, you might as well take whatever advantages you can from the store. But otherwise, like we joked about, the old the Marshall Field stores used to give out a box of Frango mints for signing up for their credit card on that day. The box is worth $8. I think we figured out at one point, this is many years ago, but the ding to your credit score cost you something like $200 in extra interest and charges if you had a typical financial situation. Mm. So don't sign up for, and even if you're going to spend $100 or something, they might give you a 10-20% off on the purchase for using the credit card that particular day. 10-20% on a $100 purchase isn't very much, and again, the hit to your credit score, the fees that they might have with it are usually aren't worth it. If you are going to close the store credit card, make sure when you do it, you note on your credit report and the letter that you are closing it at your own volition. You say, I am breaking up with you, so that it doesn't ding your credit score by looking like the store closed on you.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, and we'll take more calls for Kevin at 1-800-642-1234 or send your question to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And our next caller is Catherine in Madison. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Joy and Kevin. So here's my question. I am already of retirement age but still working more or less. I have a SEP IRA, and I'm wondering if what the pros and cons of withdrawing some of it and moving it to a Roth IRA, this is going to be, I think taxes are as low as they're ever going to be right now, and plus my income is down some this year, both from investments and from earnings, and I thought maybe I could begin to, you know, get rid of some of the tax liability and yet keep it in a... The one advantage is that it can go directly to a beneficiary without going through probate, and so I don't know if that's if those are good enough reasons. If there's any reason not to do it,
no, it's a great question, Catherine, and it's actually just to clarify. Both IRAs and Roth IRAs have that feature where there's a designated beneficiary, hopefully the correct and current one, on the account. So those would, in theory anyway, generally escape probate. That distinction doesn't matter. What does matter is that the beneficiary from a Roth IRA does not pay any income taxes on money pulled out of it. So sometimes people who are older in a low tax bracket and plan on leaving money to someone who is middle-aged and in a higher tax bracket, there might be some overall tax savings by the older person paying the taxes and converting it and then leaving the Roth IRA to an individual. The other advantages are the Roth IRA has no mandatory distribution at age 70 and a half, so you can leave the money in there and until you die, really. And also, Roth IRA distributions, as of now anyway, do not affect the taxation of Social Security. So if you pull money out of a Roth IRA in the future while you're collecting Social Security, that will not make that Social Security more likely to be taxed. What I'd like to see you do, Catherine, is look at your taxes, and if you can convert an amount that still keeps you in that 15% tax bracket. And again, are you married or single?
Right, no, single. And yes, I have a really good tax accountant who will look at my estimates, you know,
great.
You know, right before the end of the year, and will be able to tell me exactly how much, you know, I could do to stay within that 15% tax bracket.
Good. And the neat thing about doing that, Catherine, is if you make that conversion now in 2012, and then you do your taxes with your accountant and you find out that, oh gosh, a bunch of this was taxed at 25%, in theory, you have until your tax filing date to undo that conversion. You get kind of a do-over. We'll be talking about that in the next couple of weeks. But you can say, oh shoot, I didn't want to convert this $10,000, erase it. Never mind, I don't want to convert it because it ended up being taxed at a higher rate than what I thought. So that's definitely a good strategy, and I'm glad to hear you have a good CPA who will help you do that.
All right. Good job, Catherine. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question for financial planner Kevin McKinley, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. We had full lines, and a couple of people decided to hang up right when I was going to get to you. So call back. Neil in Barrington, Illinois is with us. Hi, Neil.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a pension fund from my previous employer. I'm 40 years old, and I'm currently employed. I'm planning to transfer that pension fund into traditional IRA or Roth IRA. Which is the best option for me?
Great question. I'm glad you're making this decision, Neil, now. You're working, correct?
Correct.
And you have a decent full-time salary, correct?
Yes.
Okay. It's probably not enough and not nearly what you're worth, correct?
no comment on that.
Do, Neil, it's afraid his boss is listening. What I'd have you do, Neil, is actually move that to an IRA. And only someone, and I've run into these situations before. Sometimes a person is between jobs and they have enough money to survive from savings or whatever, but they don't have a lot of earnings. And so that actually is a pretty good time to convert an IRA or a pension, if you will, to a Roth IRA and pay whatever small tax bill you have on it and be done. But if you've moved from one job to another and you are working and you still have a decent salary, generally you're better off just converting that to an IRA and deferring any tax bills until retirement. And then if you want to, you can convert it to a Roth IRA and hopefully be at a lower tax rate, or just pull it out slowly. And again, you'll still, as much as we talk about taxes, generally retirees are in a lower tax bracket when they're retired than they are when they're working.
Neil, thanks very much for the call. An email from Joel. I am self-employed and I have maxed out the $5,000 contribution to my traditional IRA for 2012. What are my options for contributing to another retirement plan in order to lower my 2012 taxable income?
You can open up other types of accounts like a SEP IRA, Joel, and you could also get married, because spouses, qualifying spouses, even those who don't work outside the home, can make spousal contributions to traditional IRAs or Roth IRAs as well, as long as there's enough earnings by the working spouse to justify the contribution for the spousal IRA as well. Now, a lot of these retirement plans, self-employed retirement plans, do have to be set up by certain dates, sometimes October 1st, sometimes December 31st, and sometimes the tax filing date. So if Joel has a good accountant or CPA, he should check with that person to see what type of retirement plan would be best for me and when do I have to actually establish it and fund it to get the qualifications in for 2012.
All right. Time now, Kevin, for the website of the week.
The website of the week, during these last few weeks before the holiday season, we're going to be giving our favorite shopping websites out there. Our first one is kk.org/cooltools, kk.org/cooltools. This is a user-submitted website where a lot of people put in really neat gadgets, and it's there's a certain, I want to say, masculine tone to some of the gifts, but sometimes those kinds of people are the hardest ones to shop for. But there are also some really neat things about, you know, that you can find for everybody. But it's a really good place to find items for that very hard-to-shop-for person. kk.org/cooltools, and we'll have a link to that website up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
Neat, and we'll share a different website like this for the next few weeks.
That's right. And if you do have one that you really like, something that offers maybe a little bit more eclectic goods or services that are especially appropriate this time of the year, send it to kevin@onyourmoney.com, and we'll include it in the future weeks.
Very neat. And you can drop a hint or two on what you think are the cool tools, perhaps, Kevin?
I'll try.
Four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC, and he'll be back next week with another edition of On Your Money. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, a lot of Republicans are still scratching their heads after last week's defeat at the polls, and we will talk with conservative commentator Babe Buchanan tomorrow at this time about the ongoing GOP soul-searching and what the future holds for the Republican Party. So I hope you join us tomorrow at this time. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Amanda Magnus for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.